Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Big Picture Blueprint. I'm your host, Dan Haberkos, along with Mason McDonald. We have an awesome guest today, one I'm very excited to interview. But before we get into that, Mason, how are things going for you?
Things are great. I've been going from closing to closing all week this week and last week. So business is booming on the sales side, which is a lot more fun than buying a bunch of stuff, which is a great start to 2024. And very excited for our guest today because I've been consuming his content for a while. And if I listened to more of his advice, I'd probably be in a much better financial state than I am. But it's going to be fun to interview him.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we have Craig Kurlop. And I remember hearing Craig on Bigger Pockets 4 or 5 years ago. I just moved to Colorado, doing my first few house hacks, trying to figure out how to get Front Range land started. And it was encouraging because he was a few years ahead, but followed a similar path where he was doing some really aggressive house hacks, just like I did. So it was great to hear that. So for anyone who doesn't know Craig started out as a house hacker in Denver. So he's just north of us. And he reached financial independence within 2.5 years via several house hacks. And at that point, he got rid of his job at Bigger Pockets and went on to be a full-time real estate agent. And in just 3 years, he's built a team of over 20 agents doing over $100 million per year in volume, which is crazy to think about. And in addition to that, so Craig invests continually, owns over 24 units, is involved in multiple syndications, and coaches other agents on how to build an investor-friendly team. So Craig, welcome. Welcome to the Big Picture Blueprint. I'm your host, Dan Haberkos, along with Mason McDonald, and we're going to discuss all things land, real estate, and business in general with all kinds of exceptional people. Let's get started.
Dan, Mason, thanks so much for having me on, guys. It's a pleasure being here. You guys are in Colorado Springs, or where are y'all at?
Yep, we're both in the Springs.
Nice. Well, one of these days we'll have to meet in person.
Absolutely. So, Craig, anyone that wants to hear your backstory, you've been interviewed a million times, Bigger Pockets among other platforms. So Mason and I really wanted to dive into here is how you've built such a strong team so quickly. Because I'll tell you, for Mason and I, a big pain point in our business is hiring, incentivizing, and retaining good salespeople. Can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah. So it's not easy, right? And especially in the last couple of years where real estate sales have gone down and it's been pretty hard to be a real estate agent. And so for those that don't know, I've got a team of investor-friendly agents in the Denver area. We kind of hit the whole Front Range. And, we do more than just investor. We also do some residential stuff as well. But it's been a tough go, right? So we started off really easy, 2020, 2021. It seems like it was really easy to be an agent. Leads were flowing in, easy handoffs to the agents. They were closing them pretty easily and things were good. And then the magical interest rates rose pretty high and the transactions almost came to a halt. I think there was like, as I think 2023 was some of the fewest transactions we've had since like the 90s or something, right? So it was a tough year for anybody who gets paid based on the transaction. And we did lose a lot of people, right? Yeah, we have gone through these ups and downs. So I wish I could come on here and just tell you guys that I had this magical formula and everybody comes on our team and never leaves. And it's a happy-go-lucky thing, but it's not the case. And so we've had to change our structure many times. We've had to incentivize things many times. And I think what I'll do is I'll tell you kind of like what worked in the beginning, what stopped working, and kind of how we shifted all along. And so how we all started, right, was I was like an investor-friendly agent. And I was kind of like, for lack of a better word, the rainmaker, right? Like I was the lead generator. And I would come in and we would get a lot of leads. And investing in Denver was really, really easy. In 2020, 2021, when rent by the room was easy, short-term rentals were taken off. People had multiple strategies to cash flow nicely. And so it was pretty easy to find a spot. You just had to get a little bit creative, and we knew the people, we knew the houses to make that happen. And so people saw our success and saw our client success. So they came to me, I handed them off to our agents, and our agents had to do almost nothing, right? All they had to do was get on a phone call, start showing houses, introduced to a lender, and start writing contracts. But that's not really how the real estate game works. In most markets. And so as the markets got harder and harder, as we grew and expanded, as the team got bigger, you know, we had less and less of those pushy leads to give to people, and they had to start working for them. And so when you go from getting paid the same amount, but needing to do more and more work, it creates a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like tension, I guess. Like it creates it's more resistance. And so, you know, we had some people leave. We had to obviously shift with the market, shift with the times. I don't think it's a smart business move to only focus on one clientele, because if that clientele dries up, you no longer have a business. So we started adding the residential arm into our business, and those guys were harder to convert. And so some of our agents left because they were used to those cushy leads, and we were making them work a little bit harder for them now. And so that kind of happened over the course of 2022, 2023. And we've had to kind of change our split structure quite a few times. And so I don't want to keep talking for 20 minutes. Do you guys have any questions on that?
No, I think this is really great, and keep going and we'll unpack it because I've got okay. A lot of questions.
Okay, sounds good. So yeah, we started off with kind of a split structure of, okay, if the FI team gives you a lead, it's a 50-50 split. And then, you know, if you get your own lead, it's a Sphere lead, it's a 70-30 split. And that went okay for a while, but we realized that we just like weren't profitable because of it. And so then we kind of shifted models to anybody new who came on the team. It was a 50-50 split across the board. And as you did more and more business, you would essentially grow into these tiers of, you know, as you became more valuable and a more experienced agent, you needed less work on our end. You know, you'd go from a 70-30 and you could even get all the way up to a 90-10 split. And that seemed to work a little bit better because people had, in terms of retaining people, right? Because people had kind of a bogey to hit, you know, they were excited about getting the better splits. But ultimately, when you've got a real estate team, kind of a race to the bottom in terms of splits that you just can't keep, because then what we ended up doing is we ended up training people for 1 or 2 years, getting them really good, and they went off on their own, and then they became our competition, right? And so how do you avoid that? And so there's been a lot of learning, a lot of things that we've been doing. And so, you know, we've recently made a pretty big move in our business that I'll talk about, but I want to give you guys a chance to kind of unpack the first couple of years of kind of going through that, and then we'll get into the next step.
Oh, yeah. So Craig, starting at kind of the front of it all, of whenever you're approaching hiring these people, because selfishly for me, my one employee, he's great. He's executive level, kind of similar to me, which is fantastic to have on the team because he's a wealth of knowledge, but he's not the same type of person that's the young, hungry, motivated salesperson that's going to be dialing phones day and night because he's financially free and financially secure. So mm-hmm. Whenever you are trying to create this avatar, this archetype of the great agents that you've hired in your brokerage, what are you seeking out, and how do you kind of structure your interview process, and how do you determine if they're going to walk the walk that they're talking?
So in the beginning, I'll be honest, man, it's like, did you have a pulse? You know, do you sleep every night? Do you eat every day? Do you brush your teeth in the morning? Like, very simple. Like, it was just like, are you human, basically? And I think that's probably how a lot of people start. And it's kind of a mistake. That's how we kind of started with our residential side of things. In order to help an investor on our investor team, you've got to have at least one investment property. And so we won't let you work with a client that's looking for an investment if you don't have one yourself. I don't think you can walk the walk without talk, or talk the talk without walking the walk, right? And so that's really the only criteria that I had. Now we're going to actually be a little bit more stricter on our who we're bringing on, and making sure that we're not wasting our time with people that are going to waste our time. And so the way that we do that is going to be through a kind of an initial screening process. And so anybody that, you know, wants to potentially work with the FI team, we're going to hop on an initial call. I'm going to get to know you. You're going to get to know me. And some of the questions that I'm going to ask you, a lot of it is going to be like, hey, what are your goals? What are your desires? How can we help that? And kind of just help understand what this agent's goal is, and why would it make sense to make their business as an real estate agent partner with ours to help them grow. And as long as values are aligned, you know, then we can kind of move on to the next step there. Other things that we might ask them is like, tell me a time where you were number one at something, right? And that question right there is almost a scary question, because most people maybe weren't number one at anything ever. And so they got to think back into a time where they had to work hard to win something. And if they seem tripped up on that question too, it might, you know, it's okay to be 2, 3, or 4, right? Of like 4, 5, 600, right? But if you're 2, 3, 4 out of 6, 7, or 8, then that's an issue. And so like, we want to work with someone that has, you know, hit the top 1% at something at some time in their lives. And then we kind of just understand, what's their work ethic? Are they afraid? Can they get over these, you know, limiting beliefs and fears and all that kind of stuff? And so that'll be the initial call. And we'll do initial call, and then we'll do like if that all goes well, we'll set up a second call that will go into like, okay, what's the point of joining the team? Why join our team? What can we offer that no other team can?
That's great. And I think for those of y'all listening that don't have experience with evidence-based recruiting and HR management, what Craig is doing there. And that specific question is fantastic. When you can ask a behavioral-based question, not what would you do in this situation, but tell me about a time that you were in this particular situation, you get to see the way people think, the way people react, and whether or not they have a story kind of aligned with that question, which is fantastic. A follow-up question to it, Craig, is you obviously have a social media presence. People that are within the real estate investing world, and especially those that listen to Bigger Pockets, know who you are and know about you. Does this add more complexity and challenges to the hiring process because you have tons and tons of young agents that are like, I want to work for the FI team, that are always reaching out? So your pool of applicants are gigantic, so it puts way more burden on you on the front end? Or do you view it kind of as a positive of the best are wanting to work with?
I definitely think I've probably had it easier than most in terms of recruiting people. Most of our agents on our team have been clients at one point or the other. And so it's funny how like our clients kind of turn into agents, and I'm totally fine with that. You know, to say that I've got like a line out the door, people waiting to join the team and like begging is not true, right? So I think maybe people see that and they see it on social media or whatever. But like, you know, I could probably be better about, you know, posting on social media that we've got a team, that we are hiring, that, you know, we love hustlers. And if you want to be an investor-friendly agent, or you want to become a real estate agent and also own investments, you're surrounding yourself with a team of agents who are also investors, and how to best leverage your license so, you know, you can, you know, you can invest in property the proper way. I guess like that, if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So one more question for you on hiring and managing people. And again, selfishly, this is something I'm working on improving my SOPs here. Do you have a set cadence or a structure around weekly meetings, accountability calls, sales coaching meetings? What does that look like? Because especially when you have a remote team, I'm not sure if you have a centralized office or not, but I have a remote team, communication can get lost, and it's important to have consistency there. So what do you do?
Yeah. So I've got, okay, right now we've got a team. Our team has actually lost some agents in the past year or so. Again, people left the industry, people just weren't succeeding. You know, no one I'm like that mad at that we lost. But we have, you know, we've got 12 people on the team right now, and I do 15-minute one-on-ones with each of them every single week. I would say I'm approaching the cap there. So as we continue to grow, I'm going to move into one group 30-minute accountability call where we're making sure everyone is hitting their lead gen goals. The conversion ratios look good. And if the conversion ratios don't look good, you know, how can we help them? You know, and by conversion ratio, I mean, you know, initial phone call to, you know, either a signed exclusive right to list or exclusive right to buy, to doing showings, to getting offers accepted, all that kind of stuff. We want to see what's broken in that funnel. And we'll do some training around whatever we see is broken. And so that's kind of on the agent side. On the admin side, we have a, you know, 5 to 10 minute meeting every morning. And it's just, hey, there's no like small talk or anything like that. It's, what are you doing today? And so they, you know, they write out and what are you doing today, and what do you need help with? And usually that call is about 5 to 10 minutes, and we kind of get on with our day. And then we'll have 2 1-hour meetings during the week with the admin team to go over, like, you know, leads. Are they coming in? Where are they coming from? Are the agents hitting speed to lead? Is there anything that we need help with, et cetera, et cetera? And then like a marketing type meeting. And so, is the content getting out there? You know, what, you know, is the website, anything marketing? Think like Instagram, website, leads coming in, just overall kind of business stuff.
That's great. And the way you break it down is, it's very simple. And for those of y'all that are listening that either have large teams or you're a solo entrepreneur, you should be having these meetings with yourself or your team regardless, because tracking this data within the funnel, that's how you determine what the baseline is of however much marketing material you're sending out. If you're in a similar business to Dan or myself, or however many cold outreaches or warm outreaches you're having, you need to have that data and be tracking it from the beginning. Do it for a long period of time so you actually have meaningful data so you can establish that baseline appropriately. And meetings are something that are so easy to just let fall off, because a lot of the corporate people that are, my job was about 6 or 7 hours of meeting every day before coming into this space. And so it was exhausting. But if you can identify the crucial aspects, and just like Craig says, with his admin team or his operating team, of 5 minutes at the beginning of the day, you're asking the same questions every day. Everyone knows what they need to prepare for every meeting. You're going to look like a fool if you haven't thought these things through. So setting that up and outlining that way, Craig, is fantastic. And I think really useful for us and everyone else to use in their business in some capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Craig, we wanted to pivot here and talk a little bit about house hacking. So I had done this for years, just like you, bought a house, rented all the rooms, moved on to the next one, just made it a rental, did that over and over. I actually still have a few houses rented by the room, and they've continued to produce, and I've gotten long-term tenants that have stayed, and they're great. And so I'm curious, with your portfolio having done that, have you left your room-by-room rentals room-by-room, or did you switch them over to traditional single-family rentals?
So as of right now, I've switched mine over. One of them is a single-family rental. The other, I do Airbnb arbitrage, where like I'm the landlord and someone is renting it from me. So I guess like to me, it's a long-term rental, but to them, it's a short-term rental. And then I've got, in our total portfolio, we still have one rent by the room property, and we still believe in that. And we may even convert some of our properties back over to rent by the room to just juice up the cash flow a little bit more.
Okay. Interesting. So tangent there, how has the Airbnb arbitrage gone for you? Would you recommend that? Are you planning to continue and potentially even scale that?
Yeah. So I love it. I love it from the landlord's perspective. I would never do it as an arbitragist, if you will. You know, my girl that rents it from me, she rents my place probably at about $1,000 premium. And granted, it's two units in one place. So let's just say $500 each per house. That would be about a 10 to 20% premium than what market rate would be, probably closer to 20%. And then I'm not paying property management fees on top of that, right? And so she's managing the property. And so, you know, on those properties, I'm cash flowing close to $2,000 a month on each one of my properties that are like that. And so I really, really like that strategy. And I think she makes good money too. Otherwise, she probably would have told me that she doesn't want to do it anymore. I don't know how much she makes. I think she probably makes more than me, which is great. And I'm happy about that because I don't have to think about it or do anything. I just watch the paychecks come in each month.
Yeah, that's excellent. And I wanted to comment on the house hacking. So for anyone that doesn't know, Craig started by house hacking a number of properties where, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the first one or two, you were actually sleeping in the living room so that you could rent out all the bedrooms. Is that correct?
Yeah, for the first one, I slept in the living room because it was only a one-bedroom place. So I rented out my bedroom on Airbnb. And was before I thought about rent by the room. Like at that time, the only way people were talking about house hacking was getting a duplex, a triplex, or a quad.
Sure.
So.
Sure. Yeah. I remember when I first moved here and I didn't have much money and I went to buy a fourplex to house hack. I had a duplex already in Ohio. And they told me, nope, sorry, with a fourplex, you're going to need, I forget the reason why, I mean, like 15 or 20% down, which I didn't have at that time. I got to go buy a single family and rent out the rooms. And that wasn't fun. And I didn't love it. And I did that for maybe 4 years, 3.5 years. But wow, that has created so much that gave me so much momentum. It let me leave my job, start my active business. And the benefit I'm getting from that now is so exponential. And I think people, they don't appreciate how much a few years of uncomfortableness or sacrifice can lead to decades of freedom down the road. And obviously you can speak to this and I'm another example. And so I don't want to, you know, get on my high horse and preach here, but guys, especially if you're newer, a few years of being uncomfortable is inevitable to start a business. And I am so glad I did that, even though I hated every second of it. So I don't know if you have anything to say there.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's what you said is exactly right. Like, I can't say that I hated every second of it. Like, a lot of times I was living with people that I liked and living with my friends. And, you know, at the time I was a single guy, so it was like pretty easy for me to do that. I was spending like maybe $2,000 a month. You know what I mean? And so like, I mean, I was just saving money hand over fist, and I could just see my net worth growing by tens of thousands of dollars every month. And so when you start to really kind of like track that and start seeing the benefits it's going to have over the long time, over the long term, and the compounding effect of it, it's just nuts. It's just nuts. And just like, I mean, Dan, your story and my story, and Mason, I don't know your story that well, but you know, it's like those first three or four house hacks lay the foundation. It's the safety net so that you can go quit your job, go to do some business venture that could fail.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for me, I didn't house hack. I got married pretty early. So the idea of sharing rooms and everything and being married just was not going to work. However, I do wish I had done it with duplexes or triplexes or quadplexes. But with that being said, Craig, kind of talking about that of matching up the right investment to your client and everything, how does your kind of marketing spiel go towards, these are the tax implications of what you're going to be doing. This is how you structure deals to make sure that you're able to capture the other side of. Dan and I are at points where rental properties for us are really enticing for the tax benefits rather than the cash flow and financial freedom side of things. So I'm interested in kind of how you match up the asset to the investor slash client that you're working with.
Yeah. So most of the people that we work with are going to be just your typical house hackers, like where Dan was on his first or second one. And they're just wanting to achieve financial independence. I don't think they're thinking that much about the taxes. You know, I think that's a little bit more for the sophisticated, like later stage investor, that's a real estate professional, all that kind of stuff. Right. Essentially it's like, hey, where's your comfort level? Like, where are you on that comfort continuum where on one side is profit, but the other side is comfort. And, you know, if they're on the, you know what, I don't care my living situation, I just want to be as profitable as possible, I'm going to say, okay, we'll go buy a trailer, go buy a van, park it in the driveway, and you can go rent out the whole house, right? That's as profitable as you'll get. If they're not willing to do that, if they don't want to buy a van or whatever, it's okay, can you live in a bedroom and rent out with roommates? Now they don't want to live with roommates. Okay. Well, are you okay living in the upstairs while renting out the downstairs of your place? It's so different. And it gets so complex. I just don't want to go there. But I'll just kind of tell them, you're going to get some tax benefits. Your tenants are going to help you pay down your mortgage. You're going to build equity in a house, and this is going to change your life forever. And so hopefully you're able to do this again and again and again in numbers 2, 3, and 4 is when things start to really get fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that, the way you describe it as far as the spectrum, comfort and profitability. And they do, unfortunately, tend to be mutually exclusive. So all that to say, Craig, I did want to expand on you and your personal investing now that you have a profitable business, things are going well. What are you buying today, or are you still buying today?
Yeah, so I'm still kind of looking at the single family homes. I like that space, you know. I've cut my teeth on that space, especially in Denver. I think I'm probably one of the most knowledgeable people, certainly probably in the top 1 or 2% of knowledgeable people in like the residential space in the Denver market. And so I'm now looking to kind of reap the fruits of my labor. And I think people move too quickly. But why would I make mistakes over the last 7 years, 6, 7 years, and not learn from them and use them and apply them and now build some wealth using what I learned? And so I'm continuing to buy, homes in the Denver area, buying similar homes. I actually moved up to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So I'm up here now, buying some stuff up here as well. And we're kind of leveraging right now. We see as co-living rent by the room being the most profitable strategy. So we're going to do that. And then we always buy houses that can work multiple ways. So we like to be able to split the houses, rent them long-term, rent them short-term, do rent by the room. And so we'll have 3 or 4 different strategies that will at least have us break even. So that way, if we don't like one strategy or it stops to work, we can always pivot to the next.
Do you hear about the deals that Dan and I are doing and feel like you lack the capital or knowledge to do them yourself? Allow us to be your partners in this and visit gupland.com to learn more about how we can provide you with all the capital to complete land transactions, as well as the expertise and guidance for you to create your own business. Visit us at gupland.com.
I love that, because so often when people go into a rant about how multifamily is the way to level up and all the benefits of multifamily, usually there's two sides of the coin where all the positives are also potentially negatives, right? Well, I go to a 4-unit and I have 4 people paying me rent. Well, you have 4 times the chance of something going wrong, 4 times the total turnover and people to manage. There's a yin and a yang to everything. And I think this is underappreciated how great, nice single family houses can be as rentals. I have a number of them and they're awesome. I haven't heard from some of these tenants in years. They pay ahead of time every month. They keep the house as if it's their own. And so I'm with you there, where I'm continuing to buy small, a few, you know, duplex, fourplex, but very nice residential properties, and you can get the 30-year debt, no balloons, right? And so agreed strongly. Well, I expect I'll continue to buy houses. In fact, the longer I do this, the more I want the most expensive asset I can buy that still covers itself and cash flows with the least amount of units. Units is such a dumb metric. You know, I got to buy 10 pieces of garbage where I grew up for the cost of one nice property out here. So I love that and agreed strongly.
Yeah. And I think one thing that people look a little, I think people, I think cash flow is important, right? Mm-hmm. But I think people have the, I won't say it's wrong, But it's, I think you need to see it from a different perspective, right? Where, you know, Denver, like if you're in Denver or you're in the Springs, like you're not investing there for cash flow. Like we can pull some strings. We can like try to like get creative and we can do our best to make a cash flow as good as possible. But if you want cash flow, you're in the wrong place. Like, but, you know, Dan, you mentioned you grew up in Ohio, and I'm not going to pretend to know that I know Ohio other than I know that it's pretty dang cheap there and people like to invest there for cash flow. But I would be willing to bet that the $70,000 house that was worth $60,000 10 years ago when you were growing up is probably going to be worth $80,000 next year. Whereas in Denver, that same house was probably worth $80,000 when Dan was growing up, and now it's worth $400,000. And then in 3 years from now, it'll probably be worth $600,000. And so would you rather have $200 a month or $300 a month with a little single family house, whatever, worth $60,000, increasing at a $3,000 a year in value? Or do you want something that's going to be increasing in value at $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year? And ultimately, where your wealth is going to come from is going to come from appreciation in real estate. You're not going to get that much wealth from cash flow. Cash flow is cute. It helps. It's financial independence. But it's not where wealth is going to come from. And so my whole thing and kind of where I'm at now is when you're early on in your career, you've got to take risks. And so you've got to, because you've got nothing to lose. And so you should be investing a little more for appreciation when you've got time for assets to appreciate. And then when you're ready to retire, hopefully your portfolio is double or triple. And by the way, it's a lot more fun to have a $400,000 property double than it is to have a $40,000 property double. And so you take your equity from those appreciating markets, you can reposition them, go invest in Ohio when you don't care as much about appreciation, and there's your retirement fund, right? But it's going to take a lot longer to get there with a lot more units if you just start in Ohio than if you start in an appreciating market and then reposition to Ohio.
That was fantastic. Everyone should re-listen to that 3 or 4 times over, because so many of us listen to these podcasts and get so excited about real estate investing. And so you want to buy a rental property and you're like, how can I do it? I can't afford it anywhere except where Dan grew up, which we'll keep picking on because it seems like a horrible place. But it's just not worth it in the long run. Figure out how you can make more active income, and whether it's your job or some sort of other strategy or side hustle or something, so you can save up money to buy an asset that's actually going to be worth it in the long run. Because a roof is a roof is a roof is a roof. And so if it costs $20,000 to replace a roof on a $60,000 house, as versus a $400,000 house, it's just those other things that you need to consider. But Craig, kind of backing up, I want to unpack a little bit more from what we talked about at the beginning of the episode, which is surrounding the profit splits that you're doing with your agents. And whenever you're coming up with those split amounts, what are you really factoring in terms of, okay, how do I keep myself afloat? What operating costs are you being exposed to that you need to make sure that regardless of the profit split and commissions that you're paying out, you're able to keep the lights on in your business? So to succinctly ask it, what operating costs, what marketing costs are you focused on? And then how do you create that profit split, or is it kind of arbitrary?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. And so profitability in a real estate agent team business is tough. I will say I've done a decent job. So at one point, I had a massive amount of overhead. You know, when things were popping and things were good, I was just hiring people left and right to do whatever I wanted them to do. And so it turns out that I had, you know, I'm going to say triple the staff that I needed, because it sounds worse, but really it was three when I only needed one. But still, you know, it was, you know, $20,000 a month more than I needed. And so when things got tough and things tightened last year in 2023, I had to let those people go. And so at that time, I had a spending problem for sure, which is funny because I'm like the frugal guy. But, you know, in business, I feel like we've got different mindsets. And so now I think, you know, we've partnered up with this big company that also partners with a lot of successful teams around the country. And we've been able to compare our financials to a lot of the other successful teams. And we do really well with marketing spend, because most of our leads are coming in just through, you know, the presence on podcasts like this one, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And that's free. It just takes time. Right. And then we, you know, we spend money on Bigger Pockets, premium leads, which have been hit or miss. And then we also do some PPC, click leads. So we're probably spending $3,000 to $4,000 a month on leads, which is a reasonable spend amount for our team size. And then our biggest hole in our team's bucket, where we're losing the most money, is our agent splits. I've been too generous to our agents over time, and it becomes a problem. And so, start of last year, I had to swallow a piece of humble pie. I was out of production for 2 years. You know, I was working 10, 15 hours a week. I was really like living a good life. Right. And then, the knife fell or whatever, and I had to get back into it. Like I had to get back into production. So now I'm helping people still again. You know, I'm helping maybe one to two, maybe three people out a month. And, it's not what I wanted to do, but I think sometimes the best leaders need to get back and go into their business. And when they see a failing business, you can't let your ego get in the way, and you got to get back into it. And so I got back into it. And I'm still in it today. And we've decided now, to partner with this other company. And that's like the next big thing that we've done. And I can get into that if you'd like, or I can answer any questions that you might have from what I just said.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you get into it. I think, Craig, what you're saying is it's a difficult balance for those of us that come from the corporate world into this self-employed solopreneur type of environment where, yeah, you want to live this passive lifestyle. But if you're creating a company, it's hard to time it right. Of when do you step back? When do you start allowing other people to step up and take control and everything? But it's humbling. I think we've all experienced it. And I don't know if you ever get the frustration, but Dan and I usually work out every day at 2 or 3 p.m. and someone will call with a work question at 3 p.m. and we're like, what the heck are you guys even doing? Like, it's the day's over. So definitely understand that, and understand the obligation and responsibility of the leader to get into the trenches and make sure you're still fighting with the team no matter what until you've fully replaced yourself. But would love to hear kind of about that structuring that you're talking about.
Yeah. And so, over the last couple of years, I'm going to put a date on it because we're recording this in early 2024. In about mid 2022 is when the market kind of really started to, rates started to rise and the market started to clench up. And I was like, okay, we can't only service investors if we want to succeed here, because if the investor pool ever shrinks in Denver, we're screwed. So we started looking more into the residential side of things. And so I hired a coach. He got our team, a more residential focused website. He helped us set up the infrastructure and all that, and how to handle residential type leads. And it's very, very different from investor type leads. And for the first year, we just missed the mark completely. Just fail after fail after fail after fail, not doing anything right, because we started off with these cushy, easy leads and then going into these harder ones that you actually have to call right away and you actually have to follow up with. And some of them are total trash, but you still have to call the next one. And all that stuff. And so it took like a year for us to like really get our agents on board with these leads. And then finally, we're starting to close a couple of these now, still nowhere near the progress that we made. And then I went and I hired another coach. We took some stuff from them. But still, within 3 months, we probably got 80% of what they were going to give us, and it would probably take us 2 years to get the last 20%. So we decided, okay, I think we're good there. But with our production on the investor side, we got into the we're one of the top teams in the U.S. I think we're in the top 1 or 2% of teams in the U.S., which is great. Like, glory to God, glory to the team. Like, I'm not going to take credit for it, but it gave us the opportunity to basically be in the room with this company called Place. Place was started by by the number one and number two real estate agents in the country, Ben Kinney and Chris Suarez. And they have provided a backbone for all successful teams to grow even more. And so we got into this room, and everybody in this room was in this room because they were really, really good at residential sales. There's 350 team leaders. 349 were great at residential sales. I was the only one that never closed a residential lead. And we got there in that room because of our success with investors. And so what I said was like, well, if we can be half as good as these guys, into residential sales, and they're giving us their playbooks. We've got 350 of the best playbooks for how to convert open house leads, how to convert internet leads, how to convert FSBOs and expireds, how to door knock. Like, we've got the best stuff for that. And so if we can just be half as good as these guys, you know, we're going to have a crazy business ahead of us here. And so that was a decision I made about 2 months ago to move forward with them. And we're still going through the onboarding and all that, but we've already got three or four pending or closed that would not have, even before going through like the agent launch program. And the stuff that they offer, you know, new agents come and join the team. The average new agent in their first year does 12 deals. That would be our second best agent last year. And so most new agents, I think, in their first year do three. So literally four times the national average. And so it was kind of a no-brainer. So now I'm jumping on the backs of giants to help progress through, to help our agents actually become really successful agents. I'm going to continue working on the investor side to like keep them being highly successful investors and investor-friendly agents. And now we've got kind of these two arms to our business that are going to help us grow.
That's really fascinating. And I was just looking up the play system, and it's kind of this like full stack tool for a brokerage to be able to implement the entirety of the business in kind of one system, one do it for you system. But mm-hmm. Craig, with a product like this and system like this, for the newer brokerage out there, do you feel like they should try and be, you know, cutting their teeth a little bit, or do you wish you had implemented this earlier on, or are you happy with when you're implementing it?
Well, you got to be a high producing team for them to even consider you, right? You got to have at least a million of GCI before they'll even talk to you. So, I think you kind of have to figure something out on your own, right? I'm glad I figured it out when I did. Maybe I wish I figured it out a year earlier. But I'm glad I figured it out before we went too far down the rabbit hole with somebody else, or, you know, paying for overpriced coaching every month or whatever it is. Because ultimately, like, your coach, while you think they care, they want to see you succeed, it kind of helps them succeed. Like, they don't care as much, right? They just want to make sure that they're giving you enough to be worth it to stay with them every month and pay you their $2,000 or $3,000 fee every month. And that's what they're looking for. There's not really any sort of buy-in or anything like that. So.
Sure. So it sounds like with Place, of course, there's a lot of tools they're providing you, but more than anything, you're kind of in a mastermind with people who are where you want to be. And it also sounds like you found that to be far more valuable than the coaching.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, they have their element of coaching. There's the mastermind. They own a lot of stuff. Like, they own more than just the team, but they own their database. They own a coaching program. They own a printing program. They own like all. So you get all this stuff at cost, right? So you're able to save. I think we're going to be able to cut our spending. Mind you, it was low already, probably by about 25% just by the partnership. And then we're going to actually maybe even more than that, right? Because they've got other, they've got their own VAs that we can get at cost. Like, VAs are already cheap, but like, they're going to be even cheaper. And, you know, having them replace some of the other members, I wouldn't replace them with our admin on our team, but just outsourcing some other things that we've got going on. You know, we're going to be saving $50,000-$60,000 a year, just with this.
That's exciting. Okay. Wow. Yeah, that's something Mason and I are working on too, because I've hired coaches and not necessarily had the best experience either, but getting around people in your space who are ahead of you, man, that pulls you up quickly from my experience as well. So that's exciting. I'll be interested, you know, in a year or two, we'll have to have you back on and see where you're at after being with Place for a while.
100%, man. Happy to.
Yeah. Okay. Well, geez, we hit on quite a bit here, Craig. Is there anything that you wish we'd have asked or we should have asked that we didn't?
No, man. I like to let you guys lead the show. It all starts with house hacking. It all starts with getting that baseline financial independence. It all starts with getting some cash flow, getting some appreciation, building that net worth up a little bit so you can feel comfortable going out, doing your own thing, and ultimately having unlimited upside. Because I can say that, you know, once I quit my job, my income just skyrocketed. I don't know if you guys are the same way, but there's not an employer on this planet that would pay me, right, what I'm able to get paid on my own. And maybe I'm getting paid more than I'm worth. I don't know. But ultimately, it just doesn't make sense, right? Like you can, like you think of the most lucrative careers, right? Doctors, lawyers, you know, it's like, okay, they're in school until they're 30 before they can even, and then they got to do residency and then they, right. And so like, you know, it takes them 10, 15 years to make the multiple six figure mark, which by the way, they now have probably $500,000 in debt they have to pay off. Whereas you can become financially independent in real estate in 2 or 3 years, then start your own business and then start making some serious dollars, you know, much before, you know, you're 30, if you're listening to this and you're younger. And then, or on the other end of it, in business, it's going to take you 20 years to reach CEO level or reach chief or like executive status to really be making serious dollars too. And so I just think it's like a cheat code to speed up time for you, your career wise, but luckily it doesn't speed up your life. So.
Yep. No, that's a mic drop moment. I agree strongly, and I've had the same experience. So it's good to hear that from you as well. Well, Craig, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, I'd say Instagram is the best spot. The FI guy on Instagram. We've also got a podcast of our own called Invest to FI. Invest the number 2, then FI. And yeah, I'd say those are the best 2 places to find out more about me. Shoot me a DM. If you're a real person, I usually get back to you. If you're trying to sell me some marketing BS, I will probably not. So you guys probably get that too.
Yep. Well, you heard it here, folks. The FI guy on Instagram. Reach out to Craig if you're in the Denver metro and need help buying or selling. That's it for today. Dan Haberkost and Mason McDonald with the Big Picture Blueprint signing off.
And that's it for today's episode of the Big Picture Blueprint. If you found it helpful, please share it with your friends or anyone you think that it could benefit. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating, and we'll see you in the next episode.